This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from Tan Talk Radio Network studio here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. At the bottom of the hour, after I talked to somebody who was absolutely wonderful, I'm going to play a repeat of a wonderful interview I did, and it's really exciting. But first, I am immediately going to turn to Joel Sartori, because I have him only for half an hour, and I would like to talk to Joel for 2 hours. Hi, Joel.
Hi there.
Wow. Oh, it's so nice to have you back on Joy on Paper. You were here, of course, in September, and we were talking about Vanish. And, the new book, The Photo Ark, One Man's Quest to Document the World's Animals. Joel, it is amazing. And I will tell you something funny this morning. I've had the book now for a while, and I've been going through it, and I love it. But this morning, I was staring at one photo for about 10 minutes, and I realized, why am I staring at this photo for 10 minutes? And it's not a photo that was taken, that you took. Well, maybe you took it, but it's a photo of you standing standing there drinking, I assume, a cup of coffee, and you look so calm, and you look so happy. And I sort of let myself be transported to another place and to, like, travel with you. Where was that photo taken of you?
Now, you're talking about the one where I'm holding the tin cup?
Yeah, that's right, the tin cup.
We call that the tin cup picture. That's one of the only pictures my wife's ever taken with a real camera.
Wow.
And I forced her to do it. We were in, We were in South Africa at a game reserve, and We were on a break, and I was there to photograph rhinos, I think, and my wife was along, and she doesn't like really to learn about photography or to do photography, because she has to stop. She's had to suffer with photography, as in being married to a photographer for 35 years this summer. So we still get a kick out of that picture.
Well,
that was quite a few years ago.
Isn't that funny that, now, of course, I'm looking at all of your photos, but for some reason, I connected with that photo, and I have a feeling it is because that photo was taken with love. There is the look on your face is so joyful, and joy means a lot to me. And I'm thinking, I had no idea who took the photo, but as I'm staring at it this morning, I had it up on my computer, and I'm looking at it, and I'm thinking, wow, because I have a tin cup. I drink coffee out of a tin cup, partly because I have all of my life, as early as I can remember, I was fascinated by Africa. I wanted to travel to Africa. I went in secretly on safari, and I turned northern Michigan into Africa. And I've always, I eat my cereal out of a tin bowl, and I drink my coffee out of a tin cup in the mornings.
Really, every day, huh?
Every day. It's just something about it that calms me down. And so when I saw this photo of you, and I had no idea your wife took it, but you can see the love comes through. This is, when you take a photograph of somebody you really love, you capture that look, and she captured it. And so I'm talking to about a different photographer. What I should be talking about your photos, but she did a wonderful job,
okay. And I will tell her you said that. She will get a big kick out of that, because we love each other dearly, but she's not a big fan of working with me when it comes to photography, so she doesn't do it very much, because it's a lot of staying in places that are not so nice. They're not as nice as that safari. We were on in Africa for sure. So she doesn't travel a lot with me. That's one of the few times she has.
Well, that was one of those remarkable things. And that's sometimes the, you know, I've found so many magical threads as I've been doing this program now for 5 years that connect me. And the minute I saw the tin cup, I said, well, I wish I was there. I just transported myself for a little while into this world of yours. And we're talking about a wonderful, I mean, what the work that you're doing is so fantastic. I want you to explain what you're doing here with the photo arc and your quest really to document the world's animals. And we'll talk about some of the photographs in here. And talk also about how you started this book. Why? And your wife had a lot to do with it.
She did. Yeah, my wife was the inspiration for the photo arc. She got breast cancer. She's fine to this day. It's been 15 years. She got breast cancer and in 2005. And I was home for a year to take care of her and our kids. And I usually was on the road. I was on the road about half a year, but that all stopped. And so while I was at home, I thought, well, these monthly issues of National Geographic, they kind of, good as they are, they come and go in a month. And I've photographed a lot of animals that are not necessarily charismatic enough to make it into the magazine. They're very small. They look like minnows or sparrows or salamanders. Nobody's really paying attention to them. I wonder if I could do a project where we just look these animals in the eye, undistracted, lit well, so you could really see them because so many of them were in danger or threatened with extinction. And so that's how the photo arc got started. It's basically just a series of portraits on black and white backgrounds using studio lighting of every animal I can find that's in human care. We use a containment tent for small animals. We ask zoos and aquariums to help us figure out how to get an animal in front of a white or black background that's in their care. And off we go. We do some video as well, but just to show you how much we're trying to do this, we're trying to get every species in captivity into the photo arc over about a 25-year period. So after 15 years, we've done 10,000 now, and we have another 5,000 to go or so. And that'll take another 10 or 15 years because we have to go a lot farther to get fewer. But the result is the photo arc. And it's just designed to get the public to care and think about biodiversity. Well, there's still time to save other species and ourselves in the process.
Well, what you said is very important, to get people to care.
Right.
Wow.
That's right.
You know, it takes a loving heart to care. And it starts in so many ways. This book is beautiful. And I want to recommend it to everybody to get it for themselves. Now you're in pandemic mode, and if you're stuck in the house still, to sit with this book, but also to give it as a gift, to give it as a gift to people with children, because I think it is so important that children learn from an early age to have a loving heart. When I was a child, we were told, and we were not allowed, you couldn't take the egg from a bird. You couldn't, because you didn't want to hurt the bird's feelings. The same way you couldn't eat beef with milk because you didn't want to hurt the cow's feelings. Now, this is, in many ways, you know, a concept that makes for a loving heart, because you start as a child thinking about and caring about animals.
Right. Right. Well, I mean, to me, the big thing, the overriding concern actually is that as we destroy nature, we could destroy ourselves. We have to have intact rainforests, not only to cool the planet, but to regulate the amount of rain we get in areas where we know how to grow crops. We have to have pollinating insects like butterflies and bees to bring us fruits and vegetables. So it's just really important that people understand that we're all in this together, that we really do need the species that we evolved here with, and that we throw all these other species away at great risk. We stand to lose half of all species, perhaps, by 2100. It's really folly to think you could doom that many other species and not think that it will have severe consequences for humanity. Of course it will. So that's what we're trying to convey, but in an entertaining way. We just try to get people hooked through eye contact and hope that they will want to dig in and learn what they can do. They can do lots of things. We can watch how we spend our money. Our consumer spending really drives products. Like, cut back on how much meat you eat. That's very water and chemical intensive, grain intensive. It's a moral issue for many of us. Cut back on the amount of fossil fuel you burn. Insulate your home. That's a great one because it puts money in the bank. A lot of these green things I'm talking about actually save you money, and that means they make you money. So there's tons of things people can do just to try to make the world better. They can support their local zoo or aquarium, accredited zoos, good zoos. Do the breeding. They do breeding of critically endangered species all year long. They help with habitat restoration and anti-poaching patrols in other countries. There's a lot of things people can do. So I suggest people, they start in their own backyard, they start at home, they do the things they can do to make their house energy efficient, they watch what they eat, they watch what they buy, plant a pollinator garden in the backyard, nectar-bearing plant, it all really pays, it helps, and it makes us feel good about how we're living our lives, doesn't it?
Exactly. And the important thing is that people have to, in some ways, it's a matter of calming down and taking the time to look at the world around us. We all have, you know, in wherever you live, there's some nature there. Even in the cities, you can appreciate a bird call and the beauty of a bird. And then to look at something like this, to have this book, or any one of your books, available to look at. And for me, Nat Geo meant the world to me as a child because it opened my eyes. And one of the reasons I became a traveler is because I loved Nat Geo books. When I got that yellow book, I was like in a different world. And so now when you take these beautiful photographs, and I just want to talk about a few, some that are so surprising. Like one, I had never heard of the red-headed Uwakari.
Yeah, the monkey.
Yeah.
Red-headed Uwakari monkey. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is something? A heck of a photo. I mean, it's a New World monkey, and I don't think anyone's ever seen it. As a matter of fact, I don't think you'd want to encounter it.
Yeah, you know, I met a guy at a book signing I was doing who really knows the U.S.'s zoo inventories, and he said, you know, they have a red Uwakari monkey at the L.A. Zoo. And I said, what's a red Uwakari monkey? This is many years ago. And he said, oh, they're the monkey that gets super bright red when they're males and they're irritated or breeding, super bright red face, bald. And this guy's a monster. I said, what's that mean? He said, well, he's just really aggressive, so you have to watch out. Well, we photographed him through wire, but he was really aggressive. He had a female in there with him, and he was just protecting her. And so we just, you know, put the very tip of the lens into the enclosure, the blackened for us, and we make the picture. But he was really amazing. He wasn't a monster. He was just very defensive of his territory.
But he's scary. He's scary looking. I can tell you that.
he is, but he's also not too big. He's about this. You know, he's just not too big. He's probably the size of a big house cat that can climb trees and bite you.
Well, good. We wouldn't want him to be any bigger, because I can tell you, if you ran into him, you would, he'd give you a bit of a
shock.
But
he's amazing. He's amazing looking. One of the best looking primates I've ever photographed, for sure.
And a beautiful, beautiful photograph.
Yeah.
And I love the other one. Another one I love is the juvenile Indian Garials?
Garials. That's a type of crocodile, isn't it?
Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah, they have a super long snout, and they're very interesting, and they're very rare now. They live primarily in India, and they eat a lot of fish, and they eat some turtles, too. But they're known for having a very long, slender snout. And so if you want to photograph them, the best place to go is to India. They have a breeding center there, and they have juveniles, which are a lot easier to handle and still look much like the adults. So that's where we went to do that picture.
Wow. And it's so many of the very, very beautiful animals that we don't actually see very often are so tiny, like the Spanish shawl. It's a what is it? A kind of
it's called a nudibranch, isn't it? Called a nudibranch,
yeah.
The Spanish shawl.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is an invertebrate, and they're type of mollusk, and they're beautifully colored, and they kind of swim through the water like a Spanish dancer moves her skirt, so that's why they call them Spanish shawls as well. But just astounding, and I don't even think that thing was 3 inches long. But that's the beauty of the photo arc pick process, is that we give all animals equal size and equal respect that way, and so they can all have their voices heard. For a lot of the animals that you see in the photo arc, this is the only time they've really been photographed and brought out to the world, thanks to National Geographic, which sponsors us and gives us lift, puts us out to the world via their social media. So we can really tell people about the animals and the organizations that are trying to save these animals and their habitats in real time. Just the National Geographic Instagram account alone is 132 million followers or more.
Wow.
So this is actually a great time to be in conservation, because there's a lot of species need our help, but we can really communicate quickly to the world and try to not only stop bad environmental practices, but celebrate communities and organizations, even corporations, that are doing the right thing and help them pass that knowledge on to others.
Well, every page is a delight. I particularly like this Tamandua, who looks like he's dancing.
Yeah, they're a tree-climbing anteater from South America. And they have...
They're furry.
They stand a lot. They're vertical a lot. And so it's no big deal for them to stand up a little bit when they're having their picture taken. You'd mentioned this book, Vanishing. This is really the third book in a series. We did the original photo arc book, which was celebrated our 5,000th species. We don't show all 5,000, but we show several hundred in the book. And then we did one on birds of the photo arc. It's just birds. Then we did Vanishing, which is the one that we talked about earlier, which is the rarest animals in the world. And so any of those books, if people want a signed copy, they can always write to me through my website, which is just joelsartori.com. Or they can type in photo arc into Google, and they'll find me. And then you go to the products page on joelsartori.com, and there they are. People can buy these books anywhere books are sold, but if they want signed ones, they'd have to come through. They'd have to order it through me.
Now, and on Vanishing, you have the Florida panther on the cover, right?
We do, yeah. That's the only purebred Florida panther that we knew of in human care, and that's Lucy. She's still around. She's at the Tampa Zoo, and very, very sweet. And, you know, for a lot of these big animals, they understand very quickly that they're going to get extra treats, and so they shift right into where we prep the room in black or white, and the photo shoot goes pretty quickly. And what she's doing there, she's kind of looking up, picture of her face, and she's looking up. She's looking up at a trainer that's over her enclosure that's got meat for her.
Well, she is a beauty. She is a beauty, and it's right here in my neighborhood, so I can go visit her.
That's right. That's right. The Tampa Zoo's got a wonderful exhibit of Florida native species. They also have key deer. That's the only place I know of that has key deer in captivity. So they do manatee rescue, and they have for many, many years. And they do a lot of rescue of other animals that are injured or orphaned. So it's a pretty important place for native Florida wildlife if you want to see it. And supporting that zoo, it's a wonderful zoo. I've been there many times. It's a great idea. If you care about wildlife and you don't know what to do, if you want to invest money into conservation, that'd be a great place to start.
Well, I think it will be wonderful as I think things start opening up here again. And I believe the zoo is opening up this week, actually. A wonderful thing to take the children. To start them young, caring about these animals, and to have this reinforcement of your wonderful series, because it is really the type of book that you keep. No one will ever sell this at a garage sale. This is the kind of book that people keep for 100 years. They'll still be looking at it. And the Photo Arc Project is just an amazing thing that you've done. And I as I said, I turn a page and I fall in love with another animal, like that St. Vincent parrot. Isn't that beautiful? I mean, it's like, how could... the world can't lose this parrot. This is such a gorgeous parrot.
I know. They're beautiful, aren't they? You know, they... That's one that my friend Chris Holmes, who's the assistant curator of birds at the Houston Zoo, raised by hand from an egg. And, that bird was his best buddy. Still is.
Okay, so we should...
He's just a beautiful bird.
I want to mention Harrison Ford did the intro for this book.
That's right.
And, of course, he's very involved in conservation. And,
yes, he is.
And the more people that we can get enthusiastic about saving animals and saving the planet at the same time, because we need these animals. Just the thought of any of these going extinct, we talk about this as St. Vincent parrot, and then, of course, and it's so funny how then something like the Himalayan mono has the same colorings, and it's so glorious, the nature and what we can find in it if we look.
That's right. And animals have adapted to nearly every environment or ecotype on the planet. And they're great at this. And if there's one thing I've learned over the years is that they're each so worthy of preserving. They're smart enough to make it through time in environments that would kill you or I quickly. And they are, when I look them in the eye, I just see there's great beauty and intelligence there. And they all have a basic right to exist, even if you put aside the fact that they really help keep us going, especially the plants. But we're very dependent on nature to keep us alive, to keep the planet healthy and thriving. And this is, you know, we'll get through this pandemic, but how do we treat nature when we come out of it? Surely we want to be better than before. At least that's my hope.
I hope so, because I want to see this Guinan cock of the rocks, male and female. This photo is so gorgeous. The difference between the male and the female. The female is so, well, tell us about, where did you take this photo?
I think that was photographed at Dallas World Aquarium, and they have a unique setup in that the cock of the rock, there's several species, but the male is always the one that's super colorful, super bold, and their feathers grow out of the top of their head to form kind of a crown.
It's beautiful.
The feathers grow at angles, and they push from both sides of the head. The feathers grow into each other and kind of push up like a Roman soldier's helmet. And the female is very drab, and so the male spends weeks and weeks performing and singing and putting on elaborate display dances in the forest, in a central kind of a clearing, or at least a spot that's big enough for several males to display. And then the females, as they become fertile, they will come into that clearing and choose a male based on what they perceive as a perfect-looking guy.
I mean, when you see that and you say, whoa, how this is such a beautiful creation. This crown, as you said, it does look like a Roman helmet, and the it's so beautiful. The color is fantastic. It's just
they're one of the most impressive birds you'll ever see, for sure.
Absolutely.
Just incredible. Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
you know, I just want to thank you for your work and what you're doing here to preserve this. I'm so happy that you found a job that's going to keep you occupied for the rest of your life.
You'll
be going until you're 100 with all of these animals, and that's a wonderful thing. And I just have to tell people, if you don't get this book for any other reason, get it just for this albino North American porcupine. I come from Northern Michigan. We have a mountain there we call Porcupine Mountain. And so we were always going out, there and we'd park our car up on the ledge there. We'd picnic in the car, but we'd be watching for porcupines because it was Porcupine Mountain and there were a lot. But we never saw an albino one, and it's so adorable. It's beautiful.
Yeah, isn't that special? That was adopted by Nebraska Wildlife Rehab after that animal's name is Halsey was hit by a car. And so, in very bad shape, they nursed her back to health, and Halsey's still going, just looking good, looking just sassy, and still running around, and really makes a big impression on everybody who meet her.
Oh, I opened the book, you know, I went through it once, and I went through it twice. I don't know how many times I've opened this book already. But then I stop at this one, and I think, oh, it's so adorable. It's funny, nobody's ever made a sort of a stuffed animal that looks like that, because it's so cute, it's adorable. But people, this is a wonderful, wonderful book. It'll give you hours, just hours, and there's little stories that go along with it, very nicely written by different very talented authors. And it's just... you've done a fantastic job, and of course, as always, Nat Geo does a fantastic job. They create books that become heirlooms to the family. People will not give these books up, and they will be enjoyed for years and years. They make perfect gifts. Father's Day is coming up. This is the perfect gift for Father's Day. It's called The Photo Ark, One Man's Quest to Document the World's Animals. And Joel, tell us again where people can get a signed copy.
Well, they can come to joelsartori.com, and they can go to the store, and we can personalize books for them, and anything that they need, we've got in terms of the books that I've done over the years. We have several, but they can get these photo arc books wherever books are sold, but if they want a signed copy, just come to joelsartori.com. And if that's too much to remember, they can just type in photo arc on the web, and my name will come up.
Okay, Joel, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. It's always a joy to talk to you, and I will keep promoting this through Father's Day, and I hope that everyone will get this wonderful book.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it and enjoyed it.
Okay. Bye-bye now, Joe. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, we're going to do some commercials, and then we'll be right back. Okay. I think we're going to do some commercials in a minute. And meanwhile, I'm going to be talking running a repeat of an interview I did with Sonia Richards-Ross. Because, you know, I've been thinking about the Olympics. I've been thinking about how much people who love the Olympics will be missing the Olympics. And so I want to just bring her back. And she wrote a beautiful book. And she is an absolutely delightful young woman who is doing so much for so many children. So we're going to run some commercials, and then we'll be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author? An artist? An inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back with my next guest.
I'm so happy today to be able to have as a guest someone who I admire so very much and who has brought tears to my eyes because I have cried many times watching this wonderful, wonderful performer. Sonia Richards-Ross is, of course, a gold medal winner for the 400 meters final in the 2012 Olympics. Sonia, it is so wonderful to have you on the program today.
Oh, it's such my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, as I said, you have brought tears to my eyes. So many, when I look back at that 2012 Olympics and just watching you, and of course, knowing that how important it was that you win this race. I love watching track. I could never run myself, but I love watching it. My sister is a great enthusiast, and so she knows all about track, and she just follows it so much. And just seeing you when you won that race, and when you took the American flag and you held it up behind you, tears were pouring down my eyes.
That means so much to me because, you know, that was such a special victory for me. I had wanted to be an Olympic gold medalist since I was 9 years old, and to finally live that moment and to share it with the world and my family and the country, it was just so special. So that means a lot to me that it made you feel the same way I felt.
Oh, I tear up even just thinking about it because it was such a wonderful moment. Of course, you were running next to a Russian, which is also nice.
Yes.
Yeah, there's something nice about beating the Russian, but it was just so wonderful in the way, and you won with such grace and charm and pure joy. I mean, when you know, the joy is a word that I really love, and I can see it in people. I can see it in their writing, and I can see it when they win things. And wow, you just had that joy. But of course, you have, I think. You know, it's so wonderful. I was so happy that Zonderkid sent me your book because they publish such wonderful books and they're so often inspiring. And your book is particularly inspiring. Of course, it's called Run With Me, Sonia Richards-Ross. And it's a story of a U.S. Olympic champion, which you are. And, you know, it's just so amazing. We were all heartbroken, of course, when you lost in 2008. But even then, you lost with grace, and you were a champion.
Thank you.
You know, you can be a champion in losing too, because you know, sometimes some of these people, when they lose, they just look, you know, so bitter, and yet there's something in you that's, I think, very special.
Thanks, Patsy. Thank you so much.
And well, I think part of it, of course, is your family. Tell us a little bit about your family, because they are, you know. We hear so often about athletes and the, you know, the terrible family, or like there might be a mother or there might be a father who pushes them and who's hard on them and miserable. And I've seen that in my own personal life. I homeschooled my kids, and they were in other kind of competitions, not sports, but other competitions. And I could see that in sometimes we'd go to these things and the parents would be really pushy and mean. And I never could do that because I wanted them to have fun with whatever they did. And I just see that in this book you talk about your family. So tell us a little bit about them.
Sure. You know, like you say, Patsy, I was very, very fortunate to have amazing parents and tremendous family support. And I think what separated me from a lot of people was that my parents, even though my mom ran track in high school and my dad was a phenomenal soccer player, they never forced me. They were always just one step behind me. And the more I wanted to do it was the more my dad got into it and got educated. And my mom was my first gym instructor and helped me to figure out how to start lifting weights. But it always just felt like support that came from a loving place and never like they were trying to live their dreams through me. So, you know, I could speak on my parents forever. And I get a chance to do that in the books. But, you know, they really did. They're a huge part of my success and making me always feel that, you know, win or lose, they loved me, but they were always there to support me if I wanted to become the best in the world.
And, of course, a wonderful sister. I know I have a wonderful sister.
Her name's Natalie, and she supports me and helps me all the time. And, of course, your sister is fantastic.
Yes. You know, my sister and I are 15 months apart, and we're best friends. And, you know, she was always my loudest supporter and the person who kind of bolstered me up and made me always feel very confident. And, you know, she's still like that today. So, yeah, it's just, you know, I'm very fortunate to have really, really good people around me.
Well, you know, of course, most people know the story of that you came from Jamaica. Of course, you were born in Jamaica, and you started running as a child on dirt tracks.
Yes.
And there's something about they must feed you something really good in Jamaica that makes all of these wonderful athletes, these runners.
That's right.
What is it? It's a, I don't know. It's a, they should bottle it. I can tell you.
I know. Well, I think, you know, it's funny because track and field is the most popular sport in Jamaica. So I think for many reasons, one, it attracts the best athletes. And then we start at a really young age with really good coaches. So I remember when I came, when I migrated to the United States at 12 and I was in middle school for a year, you know, I was so far ahead of the kid. I mean, most of the kids that were running track might have started running that year or, you know, had 1 or 2 years. And I've been running since I was 7 with intense training and, you know, world-class coaches. So I also think that gave me a little bit of an edge when I first moved here. And then, of course, I got to work with some of the best coaches in the world in the United States as well. So I always say I got the best of both worlds.
Well, the wonderful thing about you is that your life hasn't just been track. You have done so much more. Even as a child, you were doing other things, which I think, you know, that's one of the terrible things about if you are in a sport where it takes over your entire life and you don't have, you don't go to school or you don't have an education, you don't, you know, join other types of groups, but you did.
Yes. And that was always important to my dad. My dad always said to me, you never want to be one-dimensional. And I think even as a young person who, you know, when I was young, track did consume my life. I loved it. I couldn't wait to go to practice. I had all these big goals for myself. But I think my dad always knew, you know, I wouldn't be able to run forever. So it was important for me to try other things, to become passionate about other things. I maintained a 4.0 GPA while I was in high school, 3.5 at the University of Texas. So, yeah, for me, there was always, like, this desire to be good at everything that I did to give myself options after track and field to be able to move on.
Well, of course, one of the things that has been a center to your life, of course, is your religion.
Yeah.
And I always thought it was so cute that where did you go on your first date and then the next day? tell everyone about this.
Yes, so it's amazing. So my husband and I met in the cafeteria at the University of Texas. And we actually went out to dinner on our first date, but our second date was to church. And that's when I knew he was the one for me. He has a strong faith and has great connection with his family. And, you know, those two things are super important to me. So, yeah, when we went to church together on our second date, I thought, yeah, this is the right guy for me.
I think he's a keeper.
Yes.
You say, okay, you know, somebody comes along in your life and he takes you to church the next day. I think that's wonderful. And, of course, in himself, he is a star and a fantastic athlete.
Yes.
And, you know, it's just wonderful what the two of you have done together.
Thank you.
I know that, you know, both of you are so involved in doing good works. And in promoting faith and trying to bring people to an understanding that God has an important place in your life.
Absolutely.
So tell us a little bit about some of the things that you like to do to meet children, to encourage them to do well in life.
Absolutely. I mean, I've always, since I guess it's been years, every chance that I get, I take the opportunity to go and speak in high schools or speak in middle schools. I actually started a program in 2006 called the Sanya Fast Track Program, and my first program was in Kingston, Jamaica, and it was a literacy program where we helped young people learn to read on their age group level, because many of the kids were falling behind, and we found really creative ways to incorporate sports and healthy lifestyles, and we helped over 700 kids learn to read on their grade level. So that was one of the most rewarding things that I've done in my career. I've also been a part of USA Track and Field's Win with Integrity program, where we toured all around the country talking to young people about the importance of living life the right way and making the right choices, not taking shortcuts. And so that's been important to me, too. I recently started a Prom Glam program here in Austin. It's a Prom Glam empowerment program. So we go to one of the schools where many of the kids are, you know, not in the best circumstances, and we do a vision board session. We do a community outreach. And then we do the Prom Glam. And I think it's just amazing to see young girls and young guys how, you know, it's definitely not about outward beauty, but there's something that makes people feel so good when they're pampered, they feel cared about, you know, their shoulders go back, their chest pokes out a little bit, and it's just great to see that as well. So as much as my husband and I can, I've had sports clinics all over the country, and so we just do everything that we can. Now that we're not competing, that we're retired, we've been finding new ways to be connected in the community, and hopefully this book, Run With Me, will reach more kids than I can physically reach and inspire them to reach for their goals and be the best that they can be.
Well, I think Zonder Kids, they always do a wonderful job with books, with the publication. They've done a beautiful, the entire layout is wonderful.
I love it too.
Isn't it? It's very well written. You've done a great job in the writing.
Thank you. You make
it very readable, and we really want to know your story as we're reading. And I love the little inserts where they have, they have some facts and what Sonia said. I think this is a type of book that, kids can really relate to, because I've always discovered that, with young readers, if you have these little blocks, this is very clever because they do tend to read them then, you know, it's
right.
Like, okay, something's in that little square
happening.
Yeah, and I have to read it. And as a matter of fact, then I think they tend to go, after they read the entire book, they tend to go back and read those. And
right.
So I thought it was very clever where they had, I love the best first date ever, of course. I just love it. I mean, I read that twice because I think I read it three times because I thought, well, first of all, I mean, she sees Aaron Ross and, you know, like, what a hunk, you know, and then to discover that first date was so wonderful. But I love all of them. And the inside track where you talk about some of the things that kids who are interested in, who might become interested in racing and don't know too much about it, I think we'll find those, the inside track things that you talk about, very interesting.
Yes, and I think that's what we tried to do. I wanted to make the book fun. I wanted it to be, of course, a little bit about my story, my ups and downs, but also educational. And I think we found that perfect blend for young people to learn something, but ultimately be inspired. And there's space sprinkled in there, too. So hopefully they're curious about that, or, you know, that also, too, sparks their interest, and they understand that should also be a vital part in their lives as well.
Well, it is. You know, what I like, as I said, because of these little blocks of information that are different on different subjects, you even talk about diet and what your dad,
Yeah.
I love that one.
Thank you. Yeah, and it's funny because it does take a village. It does take a team of support. And my dad used to love juicing my fruits and vegetables for me. He would always say we get our strength from the earth. And so that taught me a lot about nutrition and diet and the importance of making sure that my diet was colorful and, you know, that I was always eating things in moderation. And so, yeah, you know, he was a huge part of helping with that. And I think it's important for young people to learn about diet as early as possible, because the sooner you know and the better your habits are when you're younger, the better chances you have when you're older to maintain them.
And I can see, you know, kids will read this book and they say, okay, a rainbow colored juice, what is that? You know, but then and to think the mix of spinach and beets and oranges and that it can all be, you know, it tastes good.
Yes,
and I hope that
really
inspires
good for you.
It's good for you. And I thought that was so, and I think having these little things like about your dad shows the love that you have for him. And I think that is also inspiring for kids to know that somebody, you know, important and famous still has this warmth and this, she shares this joy with her father, I think is delightful.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, and I think that, like you said, it's very important for young people, because I think sometimes as you get older, you think, oh, you want to push away from your parents. But, man, my parents have been such an integral part of my career, even now, and I'm so grateful for them. So you don't want to push away from them. You want to push into your parents if you can, you know, because they're always going to love you and have your best interest at heart.
Exactly. And so much, of course, comes from your faith. And I love all the scriptures that you put here. I think, again, these are inspiring, and I hope that the children, when they read the book, they stop and think, okay, you know, it's here. There's something here in the Bible, and when you have these quotes, I hope that it draws them into actually going to their family Bible and reading more.
Absolutely. That's my hope as well.
Well, I am just so honored to talk to you, and I'm so thrilled to be able to really promote this book. I know I'm going to be talking to quite a few readers groups and children's groups this summer, and I want to, you know, just promote this book for you, because Run With Me is an inspirational book. It's just also a very good read. It's one of these books that you read, you start, and you just want to go through it and read it and then go back to it, because it is inspiring.
Thank you so much. Thank you. It's just such a pleasure to talk with you, and I really, really appreciate your support.
Well, Sonia, I'm so honored, and I just think about you all the time when I think of Olympics, because it is important that we have people that we can admire, and we certainly, everyone who has seen you in action admires you, and now that we know that you're out there doing so much good for people, and that's so important, you know, instead of getting yourself in gossip columns and all of that bad stuff that so happens to so often to athletes, that you're doing really the Lord's work and being strong for your family and for your country.
Thank you, Patsy. You made my morning.
Okay. Well, I'm glad. And as I said, thank you again for being on my program. It was a joy for me to talk to you here on Joy on Paper.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, wow. She is such a wonderful, wonderful person. And the book that we talked about was Run With Me. And I hope that you will get it. You know, running is a one of those wonderful sports that no contact. You just run. You run like, and you hope that you don't contact anyone. You hope that you just keep running and you run ahead of everybody. And it's also a cheap sport to start, because she started, she was barefoot and she learned how to run there without any shoes, no fancy shoes, no $1,000 shoes. She just learned to run. And she did it with her wonderful parents and her family support. And eventually she landed up here. And you know, she is an inspiration. Every time I think of the Olympics, I think of her. And it was, for me, a great thrill to talk to her. So I hope that you will get that book for all the kids in your life. Run With Me is a wonderful book. As I said, it's done by Zonder Kids. It's laid out perfectly. It is just a book that any kid will get it. There are colorful photos, lots of lovely stories, just written beautifully, and a perfect, perfect book for kids. And then another book that I would like to recommend that she also wrote, and it's called Chasing Grace. And in it, Zani really talks about what the quarter mile taught her about grace, about goodness, about kindness, about not giving up. And it's an inspirational book that I think all of you will really enjoy. And so for the adults out there and sort of younger teens through adults, you will enjoy Chasing Grace by Sonia Richards Ross. And then, of course, Run With Me for the kids. Inspire them. This summer, they're going to have to get out there, and they can't do a lot of, perhaps, sports where there's any contact with within 6 feet or whatever we have to say. But at least with running, you hope that you it would be really nice if you could keep 6 feet away from anybody else running on that track. And then you will, if you do, you know, they measure it in, centimeters or whatever. You might be an Olympic star, too, like Sonia Richards-Ross. But just remember, you can do it, and you can start also writing a book. Because remember, one of the things I always tell you is one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky and talented, to have your book turned into a major motion picture, a streaming video, or a series on the Hallmark Channel. And you never know, and you won't know unless you start writing. And whether it is a research book where you have to do a lot of research now during the pandemic, you have time. You have time right now to research your family. If you have records of your family coming from Ellis Island or from any other country, this is the time, and it's amazing. You know, here, you can be sitting here in Florida or Michigan or Chicago or anywhere, and you can do research in other countries. The internet is absolutely amazing. I'm doing an enormous amount of research, all based in England, all from the libraries and the museums in England. And I'm getting the old newspapers from not just from the, you know, this century, but all the way back to the 16th century. I'm getting newspapers, copies of newspapers, and I'm enjoying it so much. And I'm reading and doing my research for a book that I'm working on. And so you can do the same thing right there. And also the wonderful thing, you can make contacts. For example, if your family comes from a certain town in France, you can contact that town. You can contact the people in that town, and they will help you. It's amazing how often you can find people who say, whoa, that's an interesting subject. Oh, your family came from here, you know, 200 years ago. Perhaps we know somebody. Perhaps we can find some information for you. This is the wonderful thing about writing. It opens your world, and it gives you so many opportunities to both give yourself a lot of happiness, to give other people a lot of happiness, and just to find the joy on paper that I have been talking about. So do that. Take some time and start researching your book. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Today, they have photographers here, and it looks like they're making Ed into a major star, and he looks so handsome, and there he is, and he saluted me, and I saluted him, and we had a wonderful day, and I just want to thank everybody for all of the wonderful emails I'm getting supporting me during this pandemic and all the encouragement I'm getting, and I am so happy to be back in the studio here at Tan Talk Radio Network. It is the most beautiful place. I love this place. It is so wonderful, and I love Ed and everybody involved with Tan Talk Radio. Thank you very, very much. Bye-bye now.